Okay, for you longtime listeners, of course, you've always had those phone numbers, but for you new listeners, many keep joining the Coast to Coast family. You now have those numbers too. You might as well keep them. We'll be back in a moment. We'll take your phone calls with, my gosh, jammed phone lines on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, John Loftus, our guest. John, by the way, thank you. You're very enlightening to be on the program. And
you're very kind. It's always a pleasure to talk to my friends, especially in Los Angeles, John Voight and Hank Paul from Crystal Sky Studios, are good buddies of mine.
Sure.
And once again, I'd like to apologize to poor Randy York and his family out there. Last week, I identified a major terrorist in Orange County and gave the address out, but the terrorist had moved from that address.
Oh, no!
Oh, it was stupid on my part.
What happened?
Poor Mr. York is getting all these harassing phone calls and things. And
oh, my God.
So, sorry, guys. Don't. But the terrorist is still out there. The point of the story
was, where did he go, anyway, the terrorist?
He's still in Orange County. I know where, but I'm not going to give his address out. The point is, why wasn't this guy arrested?
Is he an Al-Qaeda type?
Yeah, I mean, the organization he heads up, Hizbut al-Tahrir, was banned by Tony Blair last Friday as one of the groups responsible for recruiting subway bombers.
And so what's the guy do for a living, you know?
He teaches at various mosques in Orange County. We believe that he was the guy that recruited that Adam Perlman.
Yeah.
Azam the American. The kid.
Right.
Yeah, these guys are recruiting children, you know, 15 to... 19 is the target range. They get them for a couple of years and twist them around and send them out as subway bombers or Al-Qaeda volunteers.
Is he being watched?
Well, no. There's a real problem in Orange County. I can't go into a lot of it, but there are substantial, there's a major terrorist underground there that's not being watched properly. How could a guy
shocking.
Who heads up a terrorist group living openly in Orange County and he's never been touched? You got to be kidding me.
And so they're actively doing whatever they do?
Yeah.
What does the local FBI say about that?
I think it's a very good question. In defense of the FBI, a lot of times these guys want to initiate things and it get turned down with requests from Washington. One of the biggest problems is, let's say that a different federal agency that I might be working with comes up with a surveillance in Orange County, California. Because it wasn't invented by the FBI, the FBI doesn't support it. That kind of petty bureaucratic rivalry has to stop.
What about watching our borders, too?
Well, you know what? The borders are so big, it's almost pointless to watch them. You really have to infiltrate these groups before they reach the United States.
Unfortunately, they're already here.
A lot of them, yeah. But there are ways, we've got some pretty great people in the American intelligence community. And I urge people that support our country to come to the intelligence summit in Washington on President's weekend and, give these guys some support. They deserve it. They're wonderful folk.
All right, let's go to the phones, John. You ready?
Yep.
We've got about less than an hour to go, so let's take as many as we can tonight. Wild card line, you're on the air with us. Thanks for calling, and where might you be? Hi there.
Hi.
Yes, sir. Where are you?
My name's Tim. I'm about 30 miles north of Knoxville, Tennessee.
Okay, go ahead, Tim.
I want to ask your guest about his knowledge about underwater caves with the weapons of mass destruction, may have traveled to Syria. But how about underneath the lakes, like the Mediterranean Sea, south of, by Kuwait? Is it possible that they could have put them under the water in caves? Does the military have a map of the underwater systems where they have drilled oil in the past and found caves?
You mean an all sealed up, probably?
Maybe, yeah.
Well, you're very close. What happened in the Syrian area, for example, is that the Syrians hired the North Korean tunnel makers, and they built vast networks of underground tunnels. We believe that's where a lot of Saddam's weapons of mass destruction were trucked into and are stored. We've had Syrian defectors come out and tell us that. So, yeah, I mean, there are cases. Now, understand, you can't really do a lot to develop nuclear weapons without being monitored from outer space. We have a satellite now that can listen for the sound of a centrifuge. You know how when you turn on a blender in your home and the TV gets static on it?
Yeah.
Well,
if you turn on a centrifuge that rotates at, you know, super high RPMs, that creates sort of a static whine that could be read from outer space. So we found that Syria, for example, is now running centrifuges. What are they doing with nuclear centrifuges?
Wow.
We think that's part of the stuff that Saddam exported and that was supposed to be part of this Islamic consortium to build the nuclear weapons.
We have a...
Well, I'm a layman, sir, and I was just, you know, if I was going to do something, I'd hide under the water. I don't know.
You know, and nuclear water is a very good thing. We have secret installations under lakes in the United States because the water would shield the people below from the effects of nuclear radiation. And it's a good way of shielding from a thermo...
Oak Ridge is, has North Lake. It's a man-made lake. You're familiar with North Lake and Atomic. Is it possible we could be having our own nuclear submarines in North Lake without knowing it?
No, not nuclear submarines, no.
Okay.
But in Washington, D.C., there is a reservoir there, and this is public knowledge now, so I can talk about it. But there was like a miniature White House underneath that reservoir in case the president couldn't escape Camp David in time. They could reach this isolated spot.
Well, sir, I thank you for serving our country, and it's people like you that's getting us people together, and we just hope we can find them weapons.
Okay, thank you, Tim. Appreciate you being on the program. I'm looking at a 1980 picture with Donald Rumsfeld as an envoy from this country, shaking hands with Saddam Hussein. They look like buddy-buddy here, John.
Oh, yeah. You know who the real buddy-buddy was? Vice President Bush. Remember when the Israelis bombed Saddam's Oserak nuclear reactor?
Yeah.
Vice President Bush went pounding on the table in front of Ronald Reagan saying that we had to bomb Israel to blow up the airbase where those planes took off to bomb. Saddam Hussein was our friend, and he was selling all the oil to us.
All right. Now, that is now the key situation for everything. What did Saddam Hussein, granted, butcher, no doubt about it, well, what did he do wrong to get the ire of us?
He invaded Kuwait.
And did we know he was going
to
do that?
Getting ready to attack Saudi Arabia. He had chemical weapons on his rockets. They were mounted on them. We know it because we stole one, okay? We had a combined British SAS team with American Special Forces. We stole a Scud warhead and found that in order to lengthen the Scud to reach Israel and to reach other areas, they had to shrink it down. The only thing they could put on it that would be useful was a chemical weapons warhead. So I think it was Dick Cheney, actually, who sent an emissary to Saddam to tell him the joke. He said, "What's 3 feet deep and glows in the dark?" Saddam said, "What?" He said, "Baghdad, 1 minute after you drop chemical weapons on Israel." Saddam took all the chemical warheads off his missiles.
Was it April Glasby?
Oh, God. Oh, what a horrible woman. Yeah.
I mean, what happened there? Did Saddam actually go to her and say, "Look, we're fighting over this oil between Kuwait and us in this in these islands, and we're going to do something about it"? And did she say something like, "Look, we're not going to interfere in Arabic affairs," or something like that?
Yeah, what happened is there was a banana-shaped oil field across the border between Kuwait and Iraq. It was two-thirds in Iraq, one-third in Kuwait. And the Kuwaitis were pumping all the oil out of their end without remitting a fair share of the
profit. Doing slant drilling, right?
Yeah. And Saddam owed a lot of money to Kuwait. He said, "You guys got to cut this stuff out." Well, Saddam was complaining to the American oil company guys. They said, "Well, look, you know, we promise you that if you go in and just take over that oil field, which is 3 miles inside Kuwait, the Americans will make some noise, but we won't really do anything about it." Well, you tell Saddam to take 3 miles, he's going to take the whole country. And inadvertently, you know, April Glasby's job was to give Saddam a wink and say, "We're not going to make a big fuss."
Was he set up? Saddam Hussein, was he set up?
No, it was just, again, this is stupid greed by the American oil companies. They thought they could encourage this dictator to suck up to him by saying, "Go ahead, we'll fix it back in Washington. Go ahead and steal the oil."
So once again, the big corporations get involved in international politics
and screw it all up.
And now we've got at least 2,000 American soldiers dead because of their greed to get oil.
Yep.
Unbelievable. And Saddam made the big mistake of doing it.
I think we should have gone into Iraq anyway because we had to break up the weapons of mass destruction.
Well, wait a minute. Before he did anything to Kuwait, he was never rattling his saber at us.
Oh, he was ready to attack Saudi Arabia.
You really believe that?
Yeah, he was ready to attack Israel. Oh, yeah, sure he was. He's admitted it. I mean, he sent Scuds at Israel.
Well, he sent Scuds at Israel after the Kuwaiti war, but not before that.
There's a real good book I read. A friend of mine, Joseph Bodansky, he wrote a book about Osama bin Laden before 9/11. And he wrote The Secret History of the Iraq War. Yeah, take a read at that. Maybe we should have Joseph on sometime. I think he was the director of the Congressional Task Force on Counterterrorism. He was one of the most informed men in the world on Iraq and this whole area.
I don't know. I still think they look. I'm not saying
you think
Saddam,
we overreacted.
No. Hold on. I'm not saying Saddam didn't have to go. The guy was not a Boy Scout. I'm saying he was set up, and through his own stupidity, fell into a trap.
Well, God, I wish we were that clever. I wish that were the case. But I'm afraid this is another instance where the oil company said to Saddam, "Look, you know, we get the word back from Washington. Nod, nod, wink, wink. Go ahead, take the Kuwaiti oil field back." And
well, that's what I'm saying. He was set up by the big corporations.
No, it was just a total screw up. So the big corporation. Yeah. Oh, I see what you're saying.
Yeah, the corporations did it.
No, it was unintentional on their part because they lost a lot of their oil holdings.
They'll get it back.
No, the Russians, Germans, and Chinese took over in Iraq.
Huh.
The American corporations lost big time. So
let's go back to some more calls. You ready?
Okay.
Let's go west of the Rockies. You're on the air with us. Hi there.
Good evening, George and John. We're listening to you on KWIK out of southeastern Idaho.
Well, it's good to talk with you.
Thank you. Say, you know, I often wonder why in the world, while they're trying to forge this constitution out in Iraq, they don't make a provision of it that make whoever's doing the murdering over there pay for it, that whether states are set up or territories recognized or autonomous regions or whatever. Why don't we say, all right, as of this date, you're going to pay $500,000 for every civilian you kill, plus pay for all the medical treatment, and it's going to come out of your share of that oil. And I think that's only fair, it would seem to me, with the Oslo Accords are apparently being worked out in the state of Israel. It looks to me like it's time to look at the positive side of this and say, how can we stop these damn terrorists? And I think that might be a good start. I'd like your opinion on it.
All right. Go ahead, John.
I think the terrorists are really, Iran is pouring money into Syria to bring in foreign terrorists. Those are the ones that do the suicide bombing. The most popular show on Iraqi TV, the confessions of these captured guys. I mean, Syrian army officers saying, yeah, my job was to come in and train a beheading squad. Or my job was to take weapons out of Iran.
What is it, like a reality TV show in Iran?
Reality TV, yeah. So the Iranians are the ones who are really behind this war. And the Saudis as well. I mean, the Saudis know as long as this insurgency goes on, oil prices stay high, the House of Saud makes a ton of money. And the Saudis do not want a democracy next door. It threatens them. They're terrified of the first Arab democracy.
I would believe that.
You know, so we know that the foreign fighters are coming from Saudi Arabia, they're coming from Syria, and, you know, there's some real thought that once the new Iraqi government is elected, that the government of Iraq has the right under the UN Charter of self-defense. It could attack those countries that have been attacking it. And of course, Iraq doesn't have a big army right now, but it does have the American army that could call on for support. But the guys in the 3rd Infantry Division I interviewed said
it
would take us 20 minutes to conquer Syria, 19 to stop laughing, and 1 to conquer the country.
Yeah, but then you deal with insurgency, and look at the mess we've got in Iraq right now.
Yeah, but you know what? We've learned something, that we're great at conquering countries. We stink at occupying them. Our job should be go in, hold an election, get out, and give the people an opportunity. If they want to reelect the Ba'ath Party in Syria and Iraq, that's their business. We give them a shot at democracy. If they blow it.
Do you actually think we're going to leave Iraq in the next year, 2 years?
Yeah, I think by March we're going to start pulling the troops back, and then not just back to the U.S., but the ones that remain will be out the H-1 and H-2 air bases out in the desert.
What do you mean pulling them back? 10,000?
Oh, no, the majority of the troops will come home.
By March, you believe that?
No. It'll start in March.
Well, that's what I'm saying.
We have about 300,000. Iraqis in uniform, police, military, National Guard, then the Americans will start coming home.
And who will control the oil fields?
The Iraqis will. I mean, for a while there, I was afraid that Halliburton might. That would have been disastrous.
So you thought that was a possibility?
Oh, yeah. Well, what happened is, usually we have the Army runs the post-war occupation.
That's still
not
a possibility.
This time, the State Department came in, and they wasted 2 years and 1,000 American lives. And the memos that have been leaked from states show that part of their job was they were going to try and make things so bad that forced the Iraqis to sell off pieces of their oil fields.
Let's go to some more calls. Unbelievable. Wildcard line, your turn. You're on Coast to Coast with us. Hi there.
Hello, guys. Great show tonight.
Thank you. Go ahead.
This is Rich in Cincinnati. I have a theory as to why these elites are able to do such heinous acts for this money. It's kind of out there, but it's not very out there as far as Coast to Coast standards go, you know? What would be the one thing that they would fear? I mean, of all things that they would worry about, to do these things for money, they'd have to worry about. They don't seem to care about America. All they care about is profits. They don't care about remorse. You know, they're not worried about what's going to happen to them. And we've always known that the elitists, you know, just through history, have been connected with the Masons and the Templars and such. And what if they had not just guessed or thought that the religion was a farce? And there was really nothing to worry about, no penance to pay. But if they knew it.
Well, first of all, I don't think they have conscience at all. I mean, they do what they do for their own greed. John, do you want to jump on this?
Yeah, I think it's always wrong to bring in the Masons and all these conspiracy theories. You know, all greed is simply a factor that's transnational. It's above politics. And what these guys do fear is that they'll go to jail. And I think that's going to happen to a lot of Enron executives. And it's going to happen to other corporations. And it's about time. I think that once these guys realize they can't steal money in the short run without going to jail, they'll go back to the old ways of making money through long-term building up reasonable profits through reasonable efforts.
Is Dick Cheney protecting Halliburton right now?
Yeah, I think Dick Cheney has some serious problems. He was very lucky the Supreme Court allowed him to keep his file secret, but sooner or later it's all going to come out, from the Afghan pipeline to Halliburton and a few other things.
Unbelievable. Well, stay with us. John Loftus, our guest. When we come back, we'll take the rest of the phone calls. It'll be our final half hour. He's got a couple websites. You might have to hit your refresh button because he's got two that we've linked up there at coasttocoastam.com. If you need to email me, that, of course, as you well know, is very simple. That's george@coasttocoastam.com. Back in a moment, we'll take your final phone calls on Coast to Coast AM. Well, guess what Friday is? Full moon. So it'll be full moon open lines tomorrow. So get ready for that. And we'll be back in a moment. We'll wrap things up by taking your final calls with our guest, John Loftus, right here on Coast to Coast AM Worldwide. John, do you think Osama bin Laden is alive?
Yeah, I do. We've got a general idea where he is, but it would probably take killing, 5,000 to 10,000 innocent people on the Pakistani-Afghan border to get him. We know that the Iranians have been providing him with medical care and helping finance his travels and his operations.
With that kidney, you think he's very sick, very ill?
Yeah, he's got a kidney dialysis machine. In fact, Prince Turkey once tried to assassinate him by giving him a poison dialysis machine. He was very, very ill for a while.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah.
He was using it then for a while?
Yeah. I mean, and they're hard to get, so he finally got a new one from Iran.
Man. And now, speaking of things, Dr. Abdul Qadir Khan. Here's a guy
awful man
who may have given al-Qaeda some nukes. I mean, we're not sure about that yet.
I'm very skeptical of that. Now, some of my friends, understand, I had a Q clearance for nuclear weapons, and so I still keep in touch with
them. Understand.
There were 20 small nuclear warheads in Kazakhstan that may have gone out of inventory.
Oh, God.
But their artillery mid-sized shells one. So they'll blow up a city block, but not a city. Okay? Not a big threat and not a lot of them.
All right, but if you put 20 around this country and try to ignite them all...
Wouldn't do a block.
No, but what a great terrorist move that would be.
Yeah.
I mean, my gosh, a city block in 20 cities.
We think that North Korea bought most of them. Iran has some. Does Al-Qaeda have one? I kind of doubt it.
All right, what about the rumors that the Soviet Union at the time planted three nukes, suitcase nukes, in this country? Is that possible? Have you heard that?
Yeah, actually... The Soviets had no guidance system for their missiles, all right? So their only option for a first strike weapon was to bring the nukes into the U.S. or, they eventually decided that was too risky and too easy to expose. The other option was to put homing devices inside the Russian embassies. And that's what they did. The FBI once noticed that the roof of the Russian embassy in Washington, D.C. would open at peculiar times. And the CIA was able to match that up with missile tests in Russia. So there was somebody in the Russian embassy in Washington whose job it was to open up the roof, put up the antenna to guide the Russian nukes in. So that's what the Russians had. A lot of the stuff about the nukes in America is pretty much a myth. The myth about the suitcase bombs, for example. There really never was a suitcase bomb. It's something like the size of a big theatrical steamer trunk.
Sure.
But it has to be, you know, maintained and replaced every 9 months. If what you have is just basically a radiological paperweight. Now, I'm not saying that, you know, it wouldn't be nasty if someone set off one of these old nuclear weapons, but it would just spray debris around. It wouldn't create a fissionable reaction. So the stuff might stick to asphalt for a while. We have to dig up some road services and things.
All right, let's go to the phones. Let's wrap things up by taking final callers. Wildcard Line, you're up on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Hey, stimulating talk tonight, man.
Thank you, sir.
great guest is right on the point. I spoke to Art Bell many times, and he's bringing up a lot of points about Art Bell, so this is really interesting. I was just wondering, I'm here in California, and I've spoke to a few people, and like you said, you uncovered an Al-Qaeda operative in Orange County, but... there's, from my information, that there's somebody trying to make a play in California, a terrorist move in California soon, within the next few months. And I was wondering if you had any information, too, about, I heard information through channels and intelligence communities are telling people to relocate their families. Some people are moving to Canada due to some large...
No, that's urban legend. There has been, I can't say a lot about this, but there's been a wonderful effort to run surveillance of sleeper cells within the U.S., okay? We do a great job of picking up people overseas before they even arrive in the U.S., like the two kids from Lido, California. They were identified back in Pakistan and were intercepted in Japan on the flight back home. That's how advanced the system is now. Anytime that Al-Qaeda wants to send an agent into the U.S., they have to contact one of these sleeper cells for support, you know, for money or a car or a room rental. And we're watching them all. We're doing a pretty good job. Sure, there's some problems. The FBI doesn't play well with us. If the FBI didn't invent it, there's a lot of petty jealousy. And a lot of agencies are complaining now that when other agencies request for search warrants from the FBI, they're put on the bottom of the list. It might take them a year to get them. So that's one of the defects in the system we have to fix.
Are you concerned? Are you surprised, John, that we haven't had a terrorist hit since 9/11 in this country?
I'm not, because I was very intimately involved with some of the efforts to come up with means of detecting sleeper cells after 9/11. And I'm pretty sure that not much will go on without us being able to monitor it.
Next up, let's go to our first-time caller line. You're on Coast to Coast. Where are you calling from?
Reno.
Okay, go ahead.
George, interesting show tonight.
Yes, it is.
I'd like to give my kudos to John and his knowledge of the Middle East.
Well, thank you.
John, the reason I was calling is I actually live in China. I live in Chengdu in Sichuan province. I just hadn't...
Oh, boy, am I glad to talk to you. You know,
I have
been pursuing the mystery disease.
What's that?
You know about the mystery disease in Sichuan province?
The mystery disease. No, that would tell me the mystery disease.
85 farmers rushed to the hospitals last month and died. Strange symptoms. And the 8 doctors who shared information said that it contained what looked to be Ebola virus.
Hmm. Do Do you know where in Sichuan they came from?
Go to Pundita, P-U-N-D-I-T-A. She's got a blog up where we collect it all. I think it's gotten to the point now where we're getting stuff out from the Chinese physicians that are saying this. We don't know whether it was a freak of nature, but the Chinese government has ordered a total cover-up. They're not allowed to say the word Ebola. They're passing it off as Streptococcus suis, a common pig disease.
Yes, yes. As a matter of fact, we had that story last week that they called it a pig disease.
And it's not true. You don't get an 82% mortality rate. You don't get inherent organs dissolving with pig disease ever. So it looks like some sort of Ebola virus, either with weapons design or testing the virus, got loose in Sichuan, and it's all over the place. We understand now that three villages were evacuated and bulldozed.
Three villages bulldozed?
Yep.
In Sichuan?
Yep.
I've only been back for 3 weeks, and
but contact me through my website. I'd love to hear if you hear anything over there.
I'll be back. I'm leaving. I'm going back on Sunday, so I'll definitely know about it come Tuesday. Yeah.
Okay.
And I did want to comment in regards to the major fear of what's going on in China in regards to China's growth and all. And,
mm-hmm.
And I can say, of course, now my background is Asian economics. And then, of course, I have a business interest both in Sichuan and in Xinjiang. And, in fact, one of my interests are up at the Alital Pass, which is where that pipeline is coming through from Kazakhstan into China.
Yep.
There is no flavor for aggressive behavior in China. You know, you have a few of the old guard that in the Communist Party that's their saber rattling is their thing. But
given Gaddafi, the blueprints for nuclear weapons is a little more than saber rattling. When he turned over his blueprints to us of his nuclear weapons, they were written in Chinese.
Mm-hmm. And I don't
saber rattling. That's nuclear proliferation.
Yeah. But when you being there, and when you talk to the people as a whole, and when you work with these people on a general basis.
Wonderful people.
They believe me, there is absolutely no desire. They're enjoying the economic freedom entirely, way too much to even begin to concern themselves in regards to aggressive behavior.
Unfortunately, that has no interest on the People's Liberation Army. They're not sharing in the civilian profits. It's not their rice bowl. They're making their money through the usual ways, through drug sales, weapon sales, missile sales, and now nuclear sales.
Well, the National Peoples of Congress, has been going through a tremendous change. In fact, last year was probably one of the biggest noticeable changes in regards to the age. You've got that old guard that is really moving out,
Zheng Jiemin was demoted, but he's not defeated.
And then on top of it is, you've already seen Hu Jintao, who has already stated, and of course, Wen Jiantao, the premier, stated last year that, his goal is to quadruple a per capita income, by 2020. And in order to do that, they've got to maintain the current GDP growth that they have been maintaining, or else there's no way they can ever obtain that particular, standard of living that they desire.
Well, quit the funny money, all right? Get a stable banking system and a court system, and why should the American taxpayers subsidize the Chinese currency? If you're going to compete in the world market, compete fairly like everyone else.
All right, thanks for that call. Pretty enlightened. That guy knows his Chinese, doesn't he?
Mm-hmm.
Let's go next to our East of the Rockies line. Welcome to Coast. You're on the air with us. Hi there.
Hi.
Yes, sir.
This is Mark from Nebraska.
Hi, Mark. Go ahead, sir.
Yeah, I really appreciate the fact that you're on the air, George.
Well, I appreciate that too.
And I'm really delighted about the material that the guest has tonight, John.
Thank you.
I appreciate it, and I agree that Mr. Bush has been doing a pretty good job. But then again, I've got a question for you. I just wondered if you know about if there was any kind of crooked stuff going on during the past two presidential elections.
And you mean in terms of voting?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm a Democrat. Some things were crooked. For example, the Samuel Aryan said to the Republican Party, "I will deliver the Arab vote in Florida for Bush." It turns out Aryan was a terrorist, and was using his political connections to cover up his terrorist activity. So that was crooked.
How about the head of Diebold, who said, I'm going to also deliver the...
Oh, terrifying. Yeah. To think that a voting machine could possibly be rigged through a back channel. I think that what was done that really was they threw people off the polls in Florida. We had over 15,000 people were stricken, 10,000 of them. It was just, never should have been done. If there was a convict named Joe Williams, they threw Williams Joe off.
Mm-hmm.
The names were reversed. It was totally illegal, completely, blatantly illegal. They did it anyway.
Okay,
that was just wrong. And they disenfranchised African-Americans, Hispanic-Americans. The difference was enormous. Hispanic-Americans in South Florida voted for Bush. About 2% of those guys were stricken from the rolls.
Okay, and then I've got a comment. It doesn't surprise me a bit about the large corporations, the oil companies, wanting the money, and that's the main cause of terrorism. I mean, one of the main causes. It doesn't surprise me a bit. I've always kind of suspected that, and I was going to ask if there's a way. I mean, I've been reading this book by John Wiseman, Direct Action, and I was wondering how I would go about helping out in the fight against terrorism.
On our website, intelligencesummit.org, we have a click on if you want to volunteer and help. We are a public charity. We rely on citizen participation to do these things.
Okay, thanks for that call. Time for a few more. We'll take advantage of it. We'll go to our wild card line. You're up on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Hi, this is Jimmy in Brooklyn.
Hey,
I have two
Jimmy.
Quick questions.
Sure.
Mr. Loftus, you have a co-author, Mark Ahrens. Is he from Australia? Is he related to Laurie Ahrens of Australia?
Yeah, his dad just passed away. Laurie Ahrens was, this is kind of a riot. Laurie's father was sent by Trotsky to organize the Communist Party of Australia.
Yes, I have Laurie Ahrens' speech because Laurie
was the guy that resigned from the Comintern over, was it Czechoslovakia? The communist takeover, and he quit them. He's a very wonderful, decent guy.
Well, in Moscow, 1960...
But I like him a lot.
Well, Laurie Ahrens, I have the speech that he made at the International Meeting of Communist and Workers' Parties, Moscow, 1969. At least in 1969, Laurie Ahrens was a hardline communist. But my question to you is, there's a Russian defector named Litvinenko who says he knows for a fact Ayman al-Zahari was KGB even before he went to work with Ben Laden. Now, this came out in the Gulf Times from Doha, Qatar, July 17, 2005. Also, I have a Soviet publication by Soviet intelligence called World Marxist Review. This is from the late 80s.
Yeah.
And they're interviewing the leaders of the Lebanese Communist Party, and the Lebanese communists take credit for chasing the U.S. Marines out of Lebanon. And, of course, you have Gulbuddin Hekmatyar, who was identified as a KGB agent by Afghan.
Absolutely. Well, who was the guy? Who was the Arab-speaking member of the Politburo? Was it Yevgeny Primakov?
Primakov, whose real name is Finkelstein. Yeah, so there's been a long time. And then, of course,
his real name is Primakov.
Exposing Arafat as working with the KGB.
These are communist-trained Arabs, and the early terrorism, and the Russians have admitted it, came out of the KGB and the GRU.
Well, this is still going on, because in the Christian religion, the communists penetrated. That's called liberation theology. I have books printed in the Soviet Union, all bragging about their penetration.
That's a bit of a reach. Liberation theology was not communist.
It's in the Soviet publications. It's in communist publications. Castro is praising Jesus as a Marxist. So I'm saying that the Soviets promoted the worst part of the Muslim religion in order to carry on their war against the West under the guise of collapse. As I first said 20 years ago, they're going to arm Iran, Iraq, Syria, Libya, chemical, biological, nuclear weapons. It's a way to negate the mutual assured destruction doctrine. The Soviets could bomb us, and we'll blame the Muslims. This is one of the reasons Stalin was instrumental in founding the State of Israel. And then Shalepin said in 1948, we're going to use Arab nationalism to destabilize the Middle East. But, of course, religion probably has a strong emotional pull.
I wrote a book on that subject called The Secret War Against the Jews. It does the history of Soviet machinations in the Middle East. I think you might get a kick out of it. You're obviously a well-read guy. I disagree with some of your conclusions, but you and I both know the Soviets played an enormous impact in the Middle East, And they were really running a proxy war, as you say, through Islam against the West. The Chinese now are doing very much the same thing.
This just in, by the way, an explosion heard in Jordan's port of Aqaba, and authorities investigating the possible cause. Might have been some kind of mortar rocket. Apparently a U.S. naval ship in the vicinity of the blast. And that's all we know right now. So hopefully by tomorrow morning we'll have some more information. Routine exercises with the Jordanian army held by U.S. frigates down there.
Well, there's a lot of dress rehearsals going on that we may have to at some point have a naval embargo against Iran rather than evade Iran, which you never want to do. That we might actually, if we get permission from the U.N., or even if we don't get permission, we might have to blockade Iranian oil sales.
Well, is the U.N. watchdog that is overseeing their nuclear capabilities getting a little uneasy now, the fact that they've started up again, the Iranians have?
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's any reasonable person has to be alarmed at what Iran is doing.
Somebody's going to have to hit the hammer then.
Well, you know, I'm not waiting for the U.N. to do it. I think Bolton is right. You could take 10 floors off the U.N. building and no one would notice.
I don't even think.
Job.
Look, I have said that we should take that building and move it to a different country and get them out of here.
Actually, to tell you the truth, it gives us an intelligence advantage.
Does it really?
We're able to wiretap.
And do we?
Yeah.
Every office there, probably, huh?
No comment.
All right, John. Thank you so much. You've been a wealth of information for us. Appreciate you being on the program. And give us updates every once in a while, would you?
Okay, will do.
John Loftus, whether you agree with what he says or not, seems pretty well informed, doesn't he? Well, now, don't forget, tomorrow will be Full Moon Fridays. That means strange open lines. As the old Cajun cook Justin Wilson once said, I guarantee. So for Steve Carr, Dan Galante, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lone Hood, Sean Lottasour, Ian Punnett, and Art Bell. I almost said I was Art Bell. I'm George Norrie, somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. I'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.